Welcome to Meet My Brain, a field guide to autism. I'm your host, the Autistic Woman. I have a disclaimer. This episode is based on my limited experience and knowledge. Some of the information provided relates to non-PDA children and adults and is provided for contrast only. This is not intended to be advice for a parent of a child with PDA or any other person. Parents of 2 to 3-year-old children know what demand avoidance is. It's basically anything you ask the child to do. It's a time when the child has learned the word no and discovered how powerful it can be. It's the reason we refer to the period between age 2 and 3 as the terrible twos. There's something that resembles this resistance to demands, which isn't limited to the terrible twos development stage. It's what I'll be talking about in this episode. The subject of this episode was suggested by a listener. It may be undeveloped because it's relatively new. PDA, also known as pathological demand avoidance, was first described in the 1980s by a psychology professor in Nottingham. PDA is recognized in the UK, but not well known or widely accepted in the US. It's not a formal diagnosis. It isn't in the DSM-5 or ICD-10. It's only recently that it's getting some attention in the United States. There is no consensus about a definition of PDA. People think of it as a profile with features like resists and avoids the ordinary demands of life, uses social strategies as part of avoidance, for example, distracting, giving excuses, appears sociable but lacks understanding, experiences excessive mood swings and impulsivity, appears comfortable in role play and pretense, displays obsessive behavior that is often focused on other people. There are people with this condition who see it as separate from autism. There are others who see it as a subtype of autism. Still others who believe the symptoms are autism symptoms. The research is spotty at best and primarily of children. For this episode, I'll talk about what I've learned about PDA and leave it for those who recognize its features to decide how best to define it. PDA is a term not everyone is comfortable with, and so some are trying to develop a new way to describe it. One reason is use of the word pathological. We often think that means someone is compulsively evil. I found there are a number of definitions, and the one I think that's most relevant is unable to control part of their behavior, unreasonable. With PDA, a person resists the ordinary demands of life like washing, getting dressed, going to school, or work. Demands are evaded just because they're demands. A person with PDA may do so to their own detriment, even when it's something they enjoy. A person with PDA may consider themselves to be at the same level of authority as a parent, teacher, or others. They might tell other people how to behave. When it comes to themselves, they believe the rules are irrelevant. When the subject of jobs comes up in a conversation, I explain that I've been self-employed for most of my career for a variety of reasons, primarily that I don't like other people telling me what to do. A defining feature of PDA is an extreme desire to role-play and pretend. Some of this role play is a reenactment of something a person has seen. A PDAer, like they'd prefer to be called, might become obsessed about a person, a love interest, or a fictional character. They might be clingy. They might use strategies to refuse demands, such as excuses, threats, and anger. They might respond to a demand by running away, shutting down, or becoming aggressive. They can be controlling and dominating. They appear to have good verbal ability. They can seem charming, extroverted, and talkative. Eventually, their difficulty with social communication becomes apparent. Their emotional reactions can be extreme. They may feel triggered into fight or flight. They make others feel like they're walking on eggshells. They have mood swings. They can seem fine one minute and then turn angry the next. They don't like the feeling of being out of control. There's a lack of clinical research of PDA, and most relates to children. The strategies suggested to use with a child are negotiation, collaboration, and flexibility. These sound good as abstract concepts. I think caution is needed to avoid these strategies becoming manipulation. Here's what I mean. Let's look at negotiation. In my experience, once a child becomes aware that things are a negotiation, and children are very keen about this, they'll use it, and not in a good way. The parent can end up being controlled by the child, and this can relate to a child of any age. A parent of a young child may use negotiation, and it might even work for a while. As the child grows up, negotiating will continue throughout adulthood. Everything will become a negotiation, even when it doesn't need to be. It becomes an automatic way to communicate. A parent who becomes a party to negotiation won't even notice they're doing it after a while. They might overlook how tiring it is. The child will assume that everything in life is a negotiation. They won't limit it to home. They'll believe they can do it everywhere. They might be fired from jobs where negotiating with the boss is not acceptable. I think it would take a lot of training to learn how to use these concepts effectively and prevent setting up a child for a lifetime of being shunned by their peers. Sometimes the way collaboration is interpreted is that a parent or other person thinks they need to explain their reasons for making a request. This doesn't necessarily lead to compliance. Again, as a parent, I'll tell you that once you think you have to give a child a reason, it won't end. The child will see you as justifying your role as a parent and your decisions. They'll expect you to justify everything you do. This is very disempowering for a parent, and the child knows that. When the day comes that you don't have a reason or don't want to reveal it, you're looking at a serious reaction from the child. It encourages them to be demanding. Your escape may end up being, "Because I said so," that phrase we swear we wouldn't say to our children when our parents said it to us. A number of the strategies that are advocated by PDA groups are reminiscent of walking on eggshells. I don't have experience with a child or adult who is PDA, so I might be completely wrong. A PDA child may react differently than one who isn't. A parent, and again, I'm referring to parents of adult children as well, has to decide to what extent they want their lives to be centered around making someone else happy. Perhaps if you have a relationship with someone with PDA, you see it differently, and that's valid. I found that there are times when consequences become the strategy of choice. There are alternatives in the parent's control. To be successful and tolerable, the alternatives should be equal if possible. A successful strategy I've used, instead of demanding that a child go to bed, is asking, "Do you want to go to bed now or in 15 minutes?" You've effectively given two similar or equal alternatives and therefore presented the child with a way to say yes, to have a choice. With PDA, however, a child might feel that both alternatives are demands. I don't know. Do I have demand avoidance? There are activities of daily living that I don't like to do because I can think of more interesting ways to spend my time. If I'm painting, the dishes don't get done that day. Period. I've accepted that. Negotiation, collaboration, and flexibility are strategies that should work with anyone, right? Is it that we live in a world where it's okay to make demands of others without considering alternative ways of communicating? FBI hostage negotiator Chris Voss says getting a yes isn't the goal, that it's better to get a no. He suggests that we frame a question in a way that saying no seems natural. For example, have you given up on working this out? Of course, you naturally want to say no. Do you see how that question appears to give the person control by having a choice? I struggle with avoidance of exercise. I really want to do it. I enjoy it once I get started. I know it's good for me. Every evening, I promise myself to go for a walk the next morning. The morning comes and I say, maybe this evening, and the cycle continues. I've tried laying out my clothes and shoes, setting a time, thinking about how important walking is to my health. Any strategy to get me to actually do it. It's not working very well so far. Does PDA become a habit? Once a person is used to avoiding things, do they tend to continue? Consequences don't always make a difference. And to a PDAer, it can make things worse. I have sensory sensitivities and couldn't eat some of the foods my parents gave me as a kid. The food would get cold as it sat on my plate, and that made it even less palatable. I was told I wouldn't get dessert unless I finished my dinner. I'd have to do the dishes for a week if I didn't finish. I rarely had dessert and was usually the one doing the dishes, and this was when I was 9 years old. Consequences won't necessarily help someone who has PDA, particularly if there's an underlying reason for their refusal. I would have appeared to be resisting the demands put on me. For years, I wondered if I was doing it just to be obstinate. Sometimes our approach to any other person, PDA or not, could use some help. This is how I see flexibility. Which of the following sounds better when talking to a child? You can't go outside until you finish your homework. After homework, you can go outside. That's not a negotiation. It's a fact, plain and simple. The child has control over when they can go outside to have demand-free time. What about reverse psychology? This works with young children, as in when you're playing around and you tell the child, don't touch your nose. They, of course, do. But can you tell a PDA child, don't take a shower? I think that might just let them off the hook. So what's the answer? The person with PDA may not understand their own avoidance. If asked why I hate brushing my teeth, my answer is, it's boring. What does that really mean? Why do I really hate it? I know the consequences, and that doesn't make it more likely that I'll want to brush my teeth. In the city where I live, there's a requirement to have a $50 business license. The state gives us our license to practice law, so the city can't really prevent us from our profession. In essence, the city can't require us to get a license to do what we're already licensed to do. It's a concept called preemption, and it means if a higher level of government acts on a particular item, like licensing, the lower level of government is preempted from regulating it. I'm telling you this because when I was first practicing law in my own firm, I didn't get a city business license because, in my opinion, I didn't need one. The city prosecutor contacted me and said the city wanted me to have a business license. I knew him and gave him my speech about preemption, and he threw his hands up in the air, said I was right, and asked me to just pay the $50 it cost. Well, this was a demand, and an unfair one in my opinion, and so I dug in my heels and refused to get it. I knew the consequences could be negative, but I didn't care, because I thought it wasn't right. I felt like I didn't have to get a license just because the city demanded it. So we went in circles for several months, and finally, one day, the prosecutor, completely frustrated with me, called again to discuss it. After we went over the same things, he said to me, "Please don't make me prosecute you." He shifted the conversation from a demand to a request to help him. He made it my decision. He gave me the chance to help him out. Would it make a difference if the person asking worded it as a request for help? Would it matter if the person asking was also providing the support that was needed? Do PDAers put demands on themselves? And if so, do they resist them? They say there are times when they avoid demands because their brains won't allow them to comply. People with PDA might need a lot of support. The anxiety can be related to a lack of confidence, a feeling that they can't do what's asked, a feeling that their brains won't cooperate. If I'm asked to do something that seems too hard for me, that I don't know how to do, or that's unclear to me, I'll avoid it. In some court cases, a defendant is required to take a class or classes, like for DUI and domestic violence. A significant number of people don't comply. I would say many of those are demand avoidant. Here, they've pled guilty to a crime, and there are consequences for missing classes. In a DUI, or driving under the influence, it's 9 extra days of jail. When a person doesn't do their classes, they have to come to court to explain. When asked the reason, so many shrug their shoulders and say, "I don't know." Some of those are avoiding the demand. The others are avoiding the question. Everyone avoids demands at times, and to some extent. PDA is more than that. Do you experience demand avoidance? What do you think? Is it a subset of autism, a part of autism, or a diagnosis of its own, or none of these? If you're interested, there's an online PDA screening test. I'll put a link in the show notes. Contact me on Twitter at @anautisticwoman or by email at info@theautisticwoman.com. I truly enjoy connecting with you. Tell your friends and family about the podcast so more people can understand what it's like to be autistic. Subscribe and rate it 5 stars. Thank you for being part of the podcast success. Your support on PayPal or Patreon is valued and appreciated. This has been Meet My Brain, a field guide to autism. I'm the Autistic Woman. Slava Ukraini.